Today on Fuzzy Logic, we're heading back in time to 1969 July and tracing the news around Apollo 11. From preparation to launch to landing and return to Earth, we're going to track the journey of these amazing astronauts. Good morning, Canberra. My name is Broderick Matthews, and it's fantastic to have you with us on this very special anniversary episode of the Apollo 11 moon landing. That's right, right here on Fuzzy Logic today, we are celebrating the moon landing, and it's fantastic to be able to do that on 2XXFM, your community radio here in Canberra. For today's show, I've got together some of the news clips from July 1969, straight out of the Canberra Times through the National Library's Trove website. And I'm going to share those with you today, folks, as we dive into the news of the Apollo 11 mission.
I believe that this nation should commit itself to achieving the goal before this decade is out, of landing a man on the moon and returning him safely to the earth.
Those are the words of John F. Kennedy many years before the moon landing. But the first news story comes to us on July 2nd, 1969, out of Cape Kennedy, where the Apollo 11 crew faces their toughest medical test. Yes, on the 2nd of July, the Apollo 11 astronauts faced their first stringent medical test today, with blast-off for their historic moon landing flight only 16 days away. This morning, space doctors will examine the three men, Neil Armstrong, Edwin Aldrin and Michael Collins, who are due to start their three-day mission to the moon on July 16. Armstrong and Aldrin, who will descend to the lunar surface on Sunday, July 20, will spend hours this afternoon practicing the landing in a simulator. This is equipped with the same buttons and controls as their lunar module, in which they will drop down to the moon after the Apollo spacecraft has orbited the moon for a day. They will also rehearse the crucial blast back off the surface and the rendezvous with the spaceship circling above. Collins, who will remain on the mothercraft during the mission, will spend the afternoon practicing unlocking the Apollo 11 from the lunar module. The three spacemen spent yesterday in an Apollo 11 simulator rehearsing the launch into orbit, the flight to the moon, and the burn into lunar orbit. From Thursday, 3rd July 1969, blast-off rehearsal for Apollo 11 flight. Space technicians began pumping fuel into the giant Saturn V rocket in Cape Kennedy today for a rehearsal blast-off of the Apollo 11 mission, scheduled to put the first man on the moon later this month. Fueling of the rocket with liquid oxygen and hydrogen took place during a planned six-hour pause in current countdown tests, and a simulated blast-off was set for this morning. Today's tests will be followed by another rehearsal tomorrow, when the three astronauts Neil Armstrong, Edwin Aldrin and Michael Collins will put on their suits and enter the spacecraft. But by then, the fuel will have been drained from the rocket. The three spacemen were pronounced in excellent condition yesterday for their moon mission. Dr. Charles Berry, medical director of the space agency, and four surgeons examined the three astronauts for 3 hours yesterday morning. The crew appears to be in excellent physical shape, Dr. Berry said in a statement following the checkups. They look amazingly relaxed. From Friday, July 4th, 1969, the Great Space Race. Soviet may dig the first moon dirt. Informed communist sources said yesterday the Soviet Union plans to launch an unmanned moon probe on July 10 that will attempt to scoop up a sample of the moon's soil and return it to Earth. The experiment, if successful, would precede the Apollo 11 shot by just 6 days and inevitably would steal some of the propaganda thunder of the US mission. The sources, who have contacts inside the Soviet space program, added that the July 10 launch would be the third attempt to carry out the complex shot. The first two blew up. Meanwhile, the US astronaut Frank Borman has joined two Soviet spacemen for a provincial tour of the Soviet Union. Borman, commander of the Apollo 8 spacecraft which circled the moon last December, is visiting Russia with his wife and three children at the invitation of the Institute of Soviet-American Relations. He will tour the Soviet cosmonaut base at the top of secret Star City near Moscow and the Siberian Space Center at Akademgorodok. Moving on to Saturday, July 5, 1969, and there's hope for US-Soviet trip. US astronaut Frank Borman, commander of the Pioneer Apollo 8 around the moon flight last December, told Soviet journalists yesterday he hoped spacemen from the two countries would fly together in the mid-1970s. Colonel Borman was speaking to Soviet and foreign newsmen at an informal press conference in Leningrad on the second day of his unofficial visit to the Soviet Union. I'm now working on a program under which, in the mid-1970s, we hope to launch a big orbiting space station or manned laboratory, he said. I hope and can foresee a time in that program when US and Soviet spacemen will fly together. Moving forward in time to Monday, 7 July 1969, space officials worried over dinner. Space agency officials are worried about President Nixon's plans to have dinner with America's Apollo 11 astronauts the night before they blast off for the moon. Doctors have warned that the president could pass germs to the three spacemen, and any infection might mean a costly postponement of the July 16 launch date and push back the moon landing. At a press conference in Houston yesterday, the astronauts Neil Armstrong, Edwin Aldrin, and Michael Collins were elaborately protected from possible germ-carrying journalists. They sat on an auditorium stage with wind blowing from behind to ward off any floating bugs. Dr. Charles Berry, Director of Medical Research and Operations at the Spacecraft Center, has warned also of the need to ensure the astronauts carry no infection back to Earth. Armstrong told reporters that the code name for the lunar module would be Eagle and the command ship is to be called Columbia. Meanwhile, out of Moscow, Frank Borman became the first American astronaut yesterday to walk the streets of Star City, the town built for Soviet spacemen. And in an unusual gesture towards closer US-Soviet ties, Borman placed wreaths yesterday on the tombs of communist leader Lenin and three Soviet cosmonauts. From Thursday, July 8, 1969, we've got some stories in brief about Apollo. Mysterious ultraviolet radiation from a crater on the moon, north of where the Apollo 11 astronauts will land, has been observed by astronomers in southern New Mexico. The radiation has been recorded intermittently during the past 2 years near the crater Aristarenas by astronomers there. It is not expected to threaten the astronauts. Records show that a Russian astronomer had detected the same radiation 11 years ago. And in Geneva, Japan has called for the speedy conclusion of a treaty on liability from damage caused by spacecraft at the closing meeting of the 25-nation UN Legal Subcommittee on Outer Space last Friday. Japan cited reports that a Japanese cargo ship, Shinai Mam, sailing off the eastern coast of the Soviet Union on June 5th, was hit by space debris, which damaged the ship and injured five of the crew. On Wednesday, 9 July, the Canberra Times reported Nixon cancels dinner date. President Nixon has cancelled plans to dine with the Apollo 11 astronauts the night before they are launched on their moon landing voyage to assure that new germs are not passed to them, the White House announced yesterday. White House spokesman Mr. Ron Ziegler said, however, that the president still planned to view the astronauts splash down in the Pacific on July 24. The White House announced that the president would leave Washington on July 22nd for his around-the-world trip to visit the Philippines, Indonesia, Thailand, India and Pakistan in South Asia and Romania in Eastern Europe. He will view the astronauts' splashdown en route to Asia. Mr. Ziegler said that after Mr. Nixon returned from his trip about August 3, he would invite the astronauts and their wives to dinner at the White House. Moving closer to launch now, and on Thursday, 10 July 1969, delays in first step on the moon. The moment when man will make his first step on the moon has been put back 4 minutes, the space agency said last night. A space agency spokesman said that time could be several minutes off the actual time because Armstrong and fellow astronaut Edwin Aldrin might get impatient and start the walk earlier. At Cape Kennedy, the astronauts rehearsed the manoeuvres they would have to perform if something went wrong during the early stages of the giant rocket's fiery blast off from Earth on July 16. Technicians filled the water tanks on the moon ship yesterday and fitted batteries to the descent stage of the lunar module. The motor of this section can be controlled like that of a motor car to enable the astronauts to guide their craft. If the astronauts think their initial landing site too rough, they can use the descent engine to hover over the surface at between 150 and 500 feet, moving up to half a mile away to find a better spot. When the 6-foot-long probe fitted to the lunar module's telescopic legs touch the surface, the astronauts will switch off the engine, allowing the craft to come to rest at about 3 feet a second. Officials, prominent guests, journalists, and other people from all over the world are beginning to arrive at Cape Kennedy to watch the launch. Some Australian news from Friday, 11th July, Minister to watch launch. The Minister for Supply, Senator Anderson, will attend the launching of Apollo 11 at Cape Kennedy on July 16. The minister was invited by the United States National Aeronautics and Space Administration and will be accompanied by Mr. L.F. Bott, the Deputy Director of the Department of Supply. In weekend news now, on Saturday 12 July, Apollo crew test fitness. America's Apollo 11 astronauts face their last complete medical checkup today as the final countdown for their moon trip next week progresses smoothly. The three astronauts, Michael Collins, Edwin Aldrin and Neil Armstrong, were due to spend most of the day with doctors checking their fitness for the July 16 launch. The countdown, with more than 40 hours of holds for any emergency repairs, began at midnight last night, 1 a.m. Australian Eastern Standard Time today. Doctors plan to draw up exhaustive charts on the three astronauts to check against their physical condition on the moon and when the flight ends. Compared with early spacemen, Collins, Armstrong and Aldrin will dine royally in Apollo 11 as they fly moonwards. Thanks to a team of food technicians at the US Army Natick Laboratories, the space menu has grown from pastes to far more appealing foods. Shrimp cocktail, salad, beef pot roast, cereals, strawberry cubes and a cup of tea might be a typical dinner for the Apollo 11 team. But that is only one of dozens of variations. Chicken and gravy, beef and vegetables, meat and spaghetti, a wide variety of sandwiches, desserts and soft drinks are also among the 52 foods approved by NASA. Getting close to launch date now on Monday, 14 July 1969, and Soviets race for the moon. The Soviet Union launched an unmanned craft towards the moon today in what may be an 11th hour attempt to beat the Americans in the race to land equipment on the moon and return it to Earth. An official announcement said the aim of the Soviet flight was to further scientific studies of the moon and near moon space. For months, communist sources here have been predicting that the Russians will try to land a craft on the moon and bring it back to Earth with a sample of moon soil before the Apollo 11 astronauts set foot on the moon. Moscow Radio said the craft was launched from the orbit of an artificial Earth satellite and was about 41,000 miles from Earth. Western experts here said the Soviet Union had so far shown no evidence of having a rocket powerful enough for a moon landing and a return to Earth. Meanwhile, at Cape Kennedy, technicians began removing test equipment from Apollo 11 and preparing the spacecraft for Wednesday's blast-off to the moon as Russian warships cruised off the Florida coast to monitor the launch. US aircraft and ships kept a watchful eye on the Soviet flotilla, which is expected to be in Cape Kennedy area on the day of the launch. Russian ships have almost always attended manned space shots and used sophisticated electronic equipment to monitor launch activities. In Australia, a pioneer of Australian aviation, Mr. Charles Gattenby of Ipswich, Queensland, will leave for Cape Kennedy tomorrow to be present at the launching of Apollo 11. His son-in-law, Dr. Philip Chapman, an Australian scientist, is one of the heads of the US space program. In Canberra, the Prime Minister, Mr. Gorton, has been invited by the National Aeronautics and Space Agency to send a message to the moon with the astronauts of the Apollo 11 mission. Microfilmed messages from a number of world leaders are to be sealed in a capsule and left on the moon's surface. Mr. Gorton's message reads, "Australians are pleased and proud to have played a part in helping to make it possible for the first man from Earth to land on the moon. This is a dramatic fulfillment of man's urge to go always a little further, to explore and know the formerly unknown, to strive, to seek, to find, and not to yield. May the high courage and the technical genius which made this achievement possible be so used in the future that mankind will live in a universe in which peace, self-expression, and the chance of dangerous adventure are available to all." Meanwhile, in television news, program times for coverage of the historic moonshot are still uncertain. Television channels all over Australia are waiting to be advised by US officials about the availability of satellites. Apparently, one of the Atlantic satellites is giving trouble and the telecast may have to be rerouted. Details of approximate times were given yesterday. However, any definite plans will be published as they become available. Usual programs have been printed in this newspaper and will stand in case moon telecasts are postponed. Getting very close to launch date now. On 15 July 1969 in the Canberra Times, the headline, "Doubt on Soviet Collection of Moon Soil." The director of the Jodrell Bank Space Tracking Station, Sir Bernard Lovell, said yesterday in England he did not expect Russia's latest lunar probe to bring back moon soil. Jodrell Bank reported earlier that it was picking up signals from the unmanned spacecraft loud and clear. Sir Bernard said he thought the Russian space shot was the beginning of a new series of Soviet lunar flights leading to the recovery of moon rocks without the intervention of man. "My general feeling is that it is one of a series which in a matter of months will succeed in an automatic recovery of lunar samples. I think the Russians have fallen badly behind in their space timetable. It looks as if the Russians have had trouble and their programs have fallen about a year behind." Meanwhile, reporting out of Cape Kennedy, the poor will protest at Moonport. Representatives of the American Poor People's Campaign will demonstrate against government cash priorities at the Moonport here this week before the launching of Apollo 11. A spokesman said the campaigners would try to get as close as possible to the launch site tomorrow, but officials at the Kennedy Space Center said that they, like everyone else, would be turned away. Campaign director Mr. Hosea Williams said the demonstration would include hungry people from five southern states. "We're not against things like the space shot," he said, "but there's been a miscalculation in priorities." You're listening to Fuzzy Logic on 2XXFM 98.3 on your dial. This is People Powered Radio, community radio in Canberra, streaming online at 2xxfm.org.au. My name is Broderick and it's a pleasure to have you with us for this Apollo 11 edition of Fuzzy Logic, where we've gone back to 1969 with newspaper reports from the Canberra Times to set the scene around the moon launch. This report comes to us from Wednesday, 16 July 1969. Spacemen await moon launch without fear. The commander of the Apollo 11 astronauts, Neil Armstrong, declared yesterday that he and his two companions were leaving for the moon tomorrow without fear of the unknown. Speaking at a news conference, Armstrong said, "Fear is not an unknown emotion to us, but we really have no fear of launching out on this expedition. Fear is characteristic, particularly of a knowledge that there may be something you haven't thought of and that you might not be able to cope with. I think our training does everything it can to erase these possibilities." Armstrong, age 38, Michael Collins, age 38, and Edwin Aldrin, age 39, are due to blast off on a Saturn V rocket about 10:30 Canberra time tomorrow night. They are taking today off. Their training slackened off at the weekend as previous crews had complained of overwork just before launching. Aldrin, who will pilot the lunar module Eagle down to the moon, said it was a question now of when they landed, not if, and he was sure Eagle could take off again. Collins said the only dangerous parts of the mission were the things they forgot to prepare for, but he would not know what they were until they happened. Collins confessed that he did have one complaint. He said there was no television set aboard the Columbia, and so he would be one of the few Americans who would not see the moon landing. The astronauts declined to assess the possible effects of the Russian Luna 15 unmanned spacecraft launched towards the moon on Sunday. The Soviet Union has still not disclosed its precise purpose. It is widely assumed to be a mission to bring back samples of lunar soil. Armstrong and Aldrin rehearsed briefly during the day in the module in which they will attempt to ride to the lunar surface to collect dirt and rock samples that could unlock some of the secrets of how the solar system was formed billions of years ago. And in a story out of Australia, team at ANU to examine moon rocks. Four ANU scientists will watch the landing of the first men on the moon next week with more than the usual curiosity and concern. If the Apollo landing is as successful as planners hope, the four scientists, all from the Department of Geophysics and Geochemistry, will be among the privileged scientists in about 150 laboratories across the world to investigate the moon rocks brought back by the three astronauts. Less than a week ago, NASA planners decided to ask the astronauts to try and bring back about 100 pounds of moon material, twice as much as originally planned. Only about 20 or 30% of this material is expected to be available to scientists around the world for what one scientist has called the most intense and varied investigation applied to one material of all time. The collection of moon material is one of the last priorities of the mission, however. Britain expects to receive the greatest quantity outside the United States of the precious moon rock and soil. Australia hopes to receive a few ounces. The samples collected will be brought back to Earth in a sealed container and subjected to a quarantine period of about 6 weeks, during which time they will be examined by biologists, chemists, and geologists at Houston. If samples are available to outside scientists after this period, members of their research teams around the world will have to come to Houston to collect their ascribed proportion, their ascribed portions. The ANU team will be the only moon soil investigators in Australia. Their proposed investigative projects were selected by NASA because of their experience and expertise in their specialist fields. Meanwhile, out of London, there's a report, danger of moon dirt exploding. Yes, exploding moon dust could endanger the US Apollo mission, an American spaceflight commentator, Mr. Paul Haney, said last night. Mr. Haney, currently working for Britain's independent television news company, said this was an unpublicised danger known to officials of the US National Aeronautics and Space Administration. Mr. Haney said, "There's one danger that is never mentioned publicly by NASA officials, and that is the danger of moon dust exploding or bursting into flame after being carried into the moon ship. While the possibility is remote, it has been enough of a nagging worry to trigger a number of studies in the past 3 years. The moment of truth will come when the astronauts return to the moon ship after 2 hours 40 minutes on the moon's surface. They've been told to wipe their feet carefully and take off their overshoes before they go inside. And they must also brush off any particles of dust clinging to their spacesuits. Scientists think it possible that eons ago the moon dust may have contained oxygen. When exposed to the supercharged oxygen atmosphere inside the moon ship, the dust may begin to glow and give off heat." Mr. Haney said, "This is the moment when the top project scientists will be holding their breath. For the astronauts, the first hint of trouble will be a telltale glow on the cabin floor. They have fire extinguishers, of course, but nobody knows just how effective they would be in these circumstances." And on Thursday, 17 July, we reach that all-important moment. The Canberra Times reported, "Trio begins man's greatest adventure." Blasting off on man's greatest adventure, the Apollo 11 spaceship rose from its launch pad at Cape Kennedy this morning to carry three men to the moon. Mission Control at Houston, Texas, reported shortly afterward that the spacecraft had achieved an Earth orbit. 1 million spectators watched as the giant black-and-white three-stage rocket took off on time at 9:32 a.m. or 11:32 p.m. Australian Eastern Standard Time. Up to 600 million are watching the progress of the flight on television. After making final checks in their 103-mile parking orbit over Earth, the astronauts were to kick their spaceship off on the 250,000-mile journey to the moon. as the rocket thundered gracefully upwards in the precise path which has come to be routine with Apollo launches, astronauts Neil Armstrong, Michael Collins and Edwin Aldrin were unusually quiet, confining their remarks to technical exchanges. The spectacular opening stage of the flight was marked by none of the gleeful exclamations about the view which have characterised earlier launches. Laconic, but obviously cheerful and confident, technical remarks were the order of the day, in keeping with the highly professional approach for which the three astronauts are known. The first non-technical comment of the day came just over half an hour into the flight, when one of the astronauts reported, "Looks like a nice day, a few thunderstorms downrange, that's all." The three were obviously much calmer about their second trips into space. Armstrong's heartbeat during the launch phase was 110, Collins 99 and Aldrin's 88, compared with their respective 146, 125 and 110 on their first trips into space aboard Gemini craft. The Saturn rocket screamed on its pad for 8.9 seconds as a computer system made certain all five booster engines reached full thrust of 7.7 million pounds, more powerful than 92,000 locomotives or 500,000 automobiles. When the computer sensed all was right, it commanded four 40,000-pound steel restraining arms to flip back from the rocket. With agonizing slowness, the Saturn V climbed on a wide pillar of fire, gradually picking up speed as its hungry power plant gulped fuel at the rate of 15 tons a second. After 12 seconds, the guidance system tipped the rocket slightly onto a southeast heading and it sped out over the Atlantic Ocean. The biggest crowd ever gathered for a space shot, officially estimated at more than 1 million, filled beaches, camping areas, parking lots and highways for the launch. Traffic was backed up bumper to bumper for 2 miles on the four-lane US number one highway near the Titusville entrance to the Kennedy Space Center. 69 ambassadors of foreign governments flew in today. Also at the scene was the Vice President, Mr. Agnew. 3 Soviet warships, which had been at anchor 75 miles off Key West, Florida, began moving west-northwest yesterday, according to the Defense Department. This course would take them nearer to Houston Mission Control once Apollo 11 was launched. President Nixon told the astronauts on the eve of their flight to the moon that the spirit of mankind will be with you. Mr. Nixon spoke to the 3 astronauts by telephone and also sent them a telegram from the White House. The president, in his telephone conversation, described the astronauts' voyage as the greatest adventure man has ever undertaken. Coming from Friday, 18 July now, Luna 15 waits in moon orbit as astronauts awake. The Soviet spacecraft Luna 15 settled into a moon orbit last night as 3 Americans cruised towards a moon landing on Monday in Apollo 11. Moscow radio announced that the unmanned Soviet craft had become an artificial satellite of the moon, strongly suggesting that the Russians may try to observe the Americans' landing. According to AAP Reuters, the wording of the announcement strongly implied that no attempt would be made to land either the craft or a module from it on the moon's surface, as had been widely forecast. The American astronauts Neil Armstrong, Michael Collins and Edwin Aldrin awoke to news of the Russian achievement as their spacecraft hurtled towards the moon at about 5,400 feet a second, approximately 99,000 nautical miles from Earth. The Apollo 11 astronauts roused from sleep on time today after what space officials said was a good night's rest and started on the routine chores that will fill most of their first full day in space. First indications that space officials had that the still taciturn astronauts were awake came from medical officers who reported that heartbeat rates and other biological information indicated that the men were up and about. Some 20 minutes later, ground control put a radio call to the spaceship and the day's work began. The astronauts' voices sounded crisp and cheerful, but there was none of the light-hearted chatter that was a feature of previous flights. After being wished a good morning, the spacemen were given a few technical revisions to their flight plan for the day and then were read a selection of the latest news. First item was the report from Britain's Jodrell Bank Observatory that Luna 15 had gone into orbit about the moon. The astronauts made no comment on this. If the craft remains in orbit, there is a possibility, though space officials said it was remote, that American astronauts would spot it when they go into lunar orbit themselves on Saturday afternoon. Space officials here also believed the possibility of a collision between the two crafts was infinitesimal. The astronauts retired for the night about 2 hours earlier than scheduled. Before they went to sleep, they sent back to Earth an unscheduled 16.5-minute telecast showing the multi-hued Earth receiving in the wake of their moonship. The telecast was made nearly 60,000 miles out in space. The Earth appeared as a large blue, green and white orb against a background of black. America was clearly visible. In Australia, all pupils of government schools in the ACT will finish at 3 p.m. on Monday to allow them to watch the Apollo 11 moon landing on television. Most private schools are also expected to close. Coming to the Saturday news now, in the Canberra Times on Saturday, 19 July, closer to the moon. The spaceship Columbia raced unerringly towards the clutch of lunar gravity today, carrying the three US astronauts towards a Saturday rendezvous with the moon and destiny, the Associated Press reported. Everything is going so well with the Apollo 11 mission that ground controllers let the astronauts sleep more than an hour past their appointed wake-up time. "How do all our systems look?" Edwin Aldrin asked on waking. "They're looking great," came the reply from the ground. Aldrin, Armstrong and Michael Collins had rested 11 hours, spanning an entire shift of controllers. Armstrong and Aldrin each reported 8 solid hours sleep, with Collins logging 9 hours, resting for the critical weekend exploration ahead. While the astronauts slept, their spaceship hurtled toward a so-called twilight zone, in which the gravitational influence of the Earth and Moon is about equal. At 11:22 p.m. local today, Apollo 11 will be in the grip of Moon's gravity. The American Embassy in Canberra and the American consulates in Sydney, Melbourne, Brisbane, Adelaide and Perth will be closed on Monday, July 21, in honour of the Day of Participation, proclaimed by President Nixon on July 16 to mark the landing of the Apollo 11 crew on the moon. Some Apollo 11 in brief stories now out of New York. Preparations are being made for President Nixon to speak to Neil Armstrong and Edwin Aldrin early Monday morning as they walk on the moon. The event would be nationally televised. From Warsaw, Valentina Tereshkova, the only woman space traveller, wished success today to the Apollo 11 astronauts and said she was sure women would be aboard future flights. Out of Wapakoneta, Ohio, the Fisher Cheese Company added a night shift yesterday and went into operation 7 days a week because of a heavy demand for its moon cheese, which it began producing after astronaut Frank Borman orbited the moon in Apollo 8 last December and said the moon was made of American cheese. And out of Norwich, England, Britain's only pub called Man on the Moon has been granted a 90-minute extension of its normal 11 p.m. closing time on Monday so customers can adequately toast man's arrival on the lunar surface. Finally, from New York, the New York Times ran a correction yesterday on an error made in 1920 about the future rockets. The Times, on January 13, 1920, scoffed at Professor Robert Goddard, the father of space exploration, for believing a rocket could function in a vacuum. "He only seems to lack the knowledge ladled out daily in high schools," the Times wrote. With the Apollo 11 headed for the moon today, the Times declared, "It is now definitely established that a rocket can function in a vacuum." The Times regrets the error. Well, we're getting very close now, folks. And on Monday, 21 July, Canberra Times reported all set for a day on the moon. Astronaut Neil Armstrong is scheduled to take man's first step on the moon's surface today when he leaves the lunar landing module Eagle at 4:16 p.m. But for Armstrong and fellow Apollo 11 astronaut Edwin Aldrin, the excitement of being on the moon could mean that they will leave the aircraft earlier than planned. After a 6:14 a.m. moon landing, the schedule calls for the astronauts to check the lunar module for damage, eat, and then rest. But Armstrong has admitted that he will probably be too excited to sleep and the rest period may be shortened or abandoned. Australian commercial television stations have been told to be ready for a live telecast of the moonwalk at 9 a.m., about several hours earlier than the scheduled time. The announcement was made in Sydney by the International and National Coordinator for the television coverage, Mr. R. Goodman of the Australian Overseas Telecommunications Commission, on advice from Apollo Control in Houston. Early today, Canberra time, the two astronauts and command module pilot Michael Collins made final preparations for the separation of the command and lunar modules for the landing. If all goes to schedule, Armstrong and Aldrin will spend nearly 41 hours on the lunar surface while Collins orbits the moon. So far, the Apollo 11 flight has gone flawlessly. Early this morning, the astronauts reported that all systems were working perfectly. The Eagle is prepared. The initial scenes of the scheduled 2-hour, 40-minute telecast should show Armstrong near the bottom of the sloping ladder on the left side of the screen. Stretching out on the right of the screen will be the bleak lunar sea of tranquility, with the horizon a scant half-mile distant. After Armstrong becomes accustomed to walking in moon gravity, his gait will possibly be more of a hop than a walk, he will make his way to the camera and take it from its bracket and show Aldrin coming down the ladder to join him. Viewers will see Armstrong jab an 8-foot staff bearing a nylon United States flag into the lunar crust. A spring-loaded wire will hold out the flag to fly above the airless moon. There will also be a series of 3 scientific experiments, a seismometer to measure possible moon quakes, a mirror to reflect high-intensity laser light beams back to Earth to give precise distance measurements, and a device to record the makeup of the so-called solar wind high-energy eruptions from the sun out into space. The first 2 devices will be left behind by the astronauts to continue to send information back to Earth. The solar wind measuring device will be brought back to the spacemen for analysis by scientists on Earth. Lost in space. In the unlikely event that Apollo 11's moon landing crewmen find themselves unable to take off from the lunar surface, they will probably spend their last hours trying to learn what went wrong so that it can be corrected on future flights. United Press International reports that Neil Armstrong and Edwin Aldrin carried no suicide pills or lethal hypodermics with them to the moon. If for some reason their Eagle lunar lander's crucial ascent engine failed to ignite and launch them off the moon, there would be little Armstrong and Aldrin could do. There is no backup to that engine. It has to work. Even if another spacecraft were poised on the Cape Kennedy launch pad, it would take 4 days to reach the moon. Armstrong and Aldrin will land with only a 43-hour supply of oxygen. If in landing their lunar module becomes tilted more than 35 degrees, they cannot fire their ascent engine to rejoin the command ship orbiting above them. The trajectory would not be right. They have no tools to set the lunar module upright. Even on the moon, the lunar module weighs 16,000 pounds, too heavy for men in bulky spacesuits to shove around. This is Fuzzy Logic on 2XXFM 98.3 People Powered Radio. Today we've gone back to 1969 and we've been sharing some of the news from the Canberra Times, and we have now reached that all-important point.
I'm going to step off the landmark. Stepping off. He has put his left foot off on the surface of the moon. Man is on the moon.
Small step for man. One giant leap for mankind.
About 600 million people, or 1/5 of the world's population, watched live television pictures of man's first steps on the moon yesterday. Neil Armstrong became the first man to step on the moon at 12:56 p.m. Canberra time yesterday, saying, "That's one small step for man, one giant leap for mankind." Edwin Aldrin, pilot of the lunar module Eagle, followed him 20 minutes later. They stayed about 2 hours. Last night, Armstrong and Aldrin were secure again in the lunar module. Apollo 11 Mission Control at Houston, Texas, early this morning reported that Armstrong was sleeping fitfully. Aldrin was not plugged in for biomedical information. At 3:55 this morning, Canberra time, if everything went to plan, Armstrong and Aldrin were to fire their ascent engine to lift off from the moon's surface and rendezvous with the orbiting mothership Columbia, commanded by Michael Collins. Armstrong said the moon's surface reminded him of some American desert country, but it has a beauty of its own, he said. It's very pretty up here. Aldrin was impressed most of all by the variety of shapes, angularities, and other granularities of the rocks and soil where Eagle landed. Eagle landed in the Sea of Tranquility at 6:18 a.m. Canberra time after Armstrong had manoeuvred the craft manually to avoid landing in a football field-sized crater at the target landing site. The world waited as Aldrin counted out the progress of the descent step by step. Finally, Armstrong broke the tension with the words, "Tranquility Base here, the Eagle has landed." Both men reported little difficulty in moving about in the gravity force of the moon, 1/6 of the Earth's. The pair walked slowly and warily at first, aware that one false move could bring instant death on the airless grey lunar desert. But as their confidence mounted, they jumped, bounced, and kangaroo-hopped gaily in front of their landing craft, taking advantage of the reduced gravity. With television trained constantly on the astronauts, the dream of centuries became almost matter-of-fact routine as Armstrong and Aldrin dug into the moon's surface, scooped up dust and rock samples, and reported their findings back to Earth. They interrupted the operation only once to receive a telephone call from President Nixon, who said that through them, the heavens have become a part of man's world. The astronauts opened the hatch of their spacecraft at 12:39 Canberra time, 6 hours and 20 minutes after Eagle landed. Once landing together, the astronauts unveiled a plaque and planted the American flag. The plaque said, "Here men from the planet Earth first set foot upon the moon, July 1969 AD. We came in peace for all mankind." With no breeze to keep it flying, the flag had a stiffener along its top edge. Then, as the astronauts scoured the moon's surface, the secrets came tumbling out. Armstrong reported, "The surface is fine and powdery. It adheres like powdered charcoal to my boot. I go in only an eighth of an inch." Although their steps made no sounds on the airless surface of the moon, their running conversation with each other and with Earth more than 200,000 miles away seemed to keep them from any sense of isolation. Above them, the sky was black, filled with stars brighter than they appear on Earth, with the Earth itself showing directly overhead. They spoke of light and dark greys as the principal, but not the only colours. Meanwhile, down on Earth, in Canberra, people stopped work to watch and listen. The streets of Canberra were more deserted at lunchtime yesterday than even those of Melbourne on Melbourne Cup Day. Thousands who would normally have been darting in and out of shops or driving home for lunch stayed instead by the nearest television receiver to watch the telecast from Apollo 11. Hundreds of public servants remained in their offices and the packed lunch orders from One City Sandwich Bar increased by more than 700%. Shops without television receivers were deserted of customers and sometimes staff. Those with receivers were thronged with people, but were commercially no better off. Few people strayed from the television sets to make purchases. "Too much of this could break us," one store supervisor remarked, but he kept his eyes on the television set while he said it. At Trans-Australia Airlines, there was a feeling among the staff that they were included in the show. At the weekend, the airline had scheduled two flights to ensure that urgently needed spare parts were flown to the tracking station at Tidbinbilla, which had a malfunction. Normally concerned with flights much closer to Earth, Qantas City staff turned their office into a miniature cinema with seats drawn up around the television set. A roster was arranged to handle the few customers whose terrestrial journeys were more important to them than man on the moon. At the Civic branch of the Bank of New South Wales, tellers stood on chairs to watch over the heads of the customers who were taking it all in on the television set in the business concourse. At another bank, the only duty teller had a portable set on his desk. The early morning telephone awakening service operated by the post office had more than twice its normal number of requests, while the courts of petty sessions adjourned three times during the day so that magistrates, police and prosecutors could watch the Apollo happenings on a television set in the office upstairs. A Civic restaurant, which normally does good business on Mondays, had only two customers for lunch, while hotel bars did good business as customers stayed on to watch Apollo 11. In a city department store, a man who went to buy a suit during the telecast was asked if he could select his own suit and try it on or come back later. He selected his own suit. Arriving and departing aircraft at Canberra Airport were not the focus of attention they normally are. Passengers clustered around a television set in the passenger lounge, along with visitors and airport staff. At most Canberra schools, pupils spent the day watching moon telecasts, while at others, only those who live close by went home for lunch. Most of them stayed home. From noon yesterday, most of Canberra had its eyes, ears and minds on the moon. It was several hours before they came back to Earth. Moving on now to Wednesday, 23rd July, and the astronauts rest as they head for home. Satisfied that all was well as their spacecraft headed for home from the moon, the Apollo 11 astronauts signed off early this morning and turned in for a good sleep. Late tonight, all was normal aboard Apollo 11, which was travelling at 3,056 miles per hour. Telemetry showed that the three astronauts were asleep. Neil Armstrong, Edward Aldrin and Michael Collins were up early yesterday to prepare for their lunar module's blast-off from the moon, the rendezvous in space and the critical rocket firing to escape moon's orbit. At 5:27 p.m. ground stations reported their last contact with Eagle, the small ferry craft which took Armstrong and Aldrin safely to the surface of the moon and then back up to Collins in the orbiting command ship. Mission Control reported that the batteries in the ascent stage of the lunar module, which was left in orbit about the moon, had failed and added, "We don't expect to hear from Eagle again." The Associated Press said astronauts would receive the strongest welcome a nation had ever accorded its heroes when they splashed down in the Pacific Ocean at 2:51 a.m. on Friday. Meanwhile, as the astronauts left the lunar surface, three observatories in the U.S. trained ruby-red laser rays on a precision reflector left behind, with which they hoped to measure the distance from Earth to Moon within 6 inches. A return was reported by the Lick Observatory in California, and astronomers at the University of Texas McDonald Observatory said they had already come tantalizingly close to hitting the reflector. The seismometer left on the moon had already begun to work yesterday, recording the footfalls of the astronauts and the pounding of their geological picks and hammers on the soil. Space tracking stations at Honeysuckle Creek and Tidbinbilla near Canberra were the first in the world to make contact with the astronauts in Apollo 11 yesterday after they emerged from the hut behind the moon at the start of their journey back to Earth. Let's jump forwards now, and we're going to jump to Friday, 25 July 1969, reporting from onboard the USS Hornet. Apollo 11 splashed down in the Pacific Ocean at 2:48 a.m. Australian Eastern Standard Time today. All three astronauts were reported safe, although the lander landed upside down. Immediately, the first rescue helicopters swooped in, piloted by Lieutenant Commander Dan Richmond, with frogmen on board. Apollo splashed down 11 miles away from USS Hornet, which meant that President Nixon was unable to watch the pickup procedure. The Apollo 11 splashdown target area was shifted 215 nautical miles because of bad weather in the recovery area of the Pacific Ocean. The three astronauts, Armstrong, Aldrin and Collins, received word of a change in their splashdown target just before they began their last sleep. The new splashdown site was about 1,000 miles southwest of Honolulu. The Apollo astronauts flew their lander. The bell-shaped command capsule used the aerodynamic lifting capacity of its underside to fly the extra distance downrange, Mission Control said. President Nixon took off from USS Arlington for the USS Hornet by helicopter, arriving at 2 a.m. Australian Eastern Standard Time. With him was former astronaut Frank Borman, who's been with President most of the time since Apollo 11 took off from Cape Kennedy on July 16. And reported in Saturday's paper on 26 July 1969, "Gee, you look great," says President. The world's first moon men have been pronounced in very good shape after their historic landing on the moon and return to Earth. The US astronauts Armstrong, Aldrin and Collins received their first post-flight physical examination on the aircraft carrier Hornet today. "They were in very good shape," said Dr. William Carpentier of NASA. President Nixon greeted the astronauts through the glass of the sealed quarantine facility. Gee, you look great, he told the smiling astronauts. In the jubilant USA, church bells, sirens, horns and fireworks sounded in triumph, and world leaders showered telegrams of congratulations. After laughing and joking with the astronauts, President Nixon said the past week was the most important since creation. As a result of what you've done, the world has never been closer together. I hope we can do our job better. We can reach for the stars as you have, he said. It's only been 8 days, just a long week, and this is the greatest week in the history of the world since creation, because as a result of what happened in this week, the world is bigger infinitely. And from Jan, Joan and Pat, the wives of the astronauts respectively, I bring their love and congratulations, Nixon said. The three astronauts will be flown to Houston from Hawaii on Sunday. Well, that wraps it up, folks, for the news reports today here on Fuzzy Logic. All those news reports were taken from Trove, the National Library of Australia's website of old newspapers, and they came from the Canberra Times. This has been Fuzzy Logic on 2XXFM. My name's Broderick Matthews. I hope you enjoyed your science on a Sunday.